In the late 1940s, when you were playing for the Metropolitan Opera, you were also very much in the jazz scene in New York, you know, the clubs on Broadway and 7th Avenue,
right.
Birdland, the Royal Roost, the Aquarium, and all those. Could you be so kind as to recall for our listeners that time for us, something about that time, what it was like to be there?
Well, it was simply incredible, and there's nothing like that left in New York or any of the major cities of the United States. When, you know, in those years, we were talking here about 1945, 46, right after the war, or even during the war, when jazz reigned supreme in our land as the popular music. There was jazz and there was classical music. And every American was involved with one or the other. And so you ask me this question, what was it like? Look, I mean, I can't put it any more strikingly than this. Imagine my playing Mozart's Marriage of Figaro at the Met, or Wagner's Götterdämmerung, or Strauss's Salome. Okay, already an incredible experience. I meet my wife at the stage door, and we start walking up Broadway. And there's 10 jazz clubs on Broadway, all the way up to, you know, 53rd Street. And as you mentioned, the Aquarium, even Child's Restaurant had a jazz policy. People like Duke Ellington even played there, you know, and a lot of combos of the time. So anyway, if that wasn't enough, then you could go over to 7th Avenue, which is virtually parallel to Broadway, and there was another five or six clubs. And then in the side streets, there were clubs, and one of the most famous was Bop City, where a lot of the bebop was, new bebop was played. And if that wasn't enough, then you went over to 52nd Street, where there was another six or seven clubs where, you know, Coleman Hawkins played, Billie Holiday sang, Art Tatum could be heard. So, I mean, it was just so full of music that, point of fact, my wife and I, we hardly ever slept because after playing the opera, you know, we would stay up to 4 o'clock because the clubs also in those days, they didn't stop at 12 or 1. They at least went to 2, and mostly they went till 4 a.m. So, I mean, I feasted on all that music, you know. I mean, I can't imagine anything happier than those experiences.
How did it come about that you started playing with some of these musicians?
Well, it just was my great love and admiration for jazz to begin with, and then I think the watershed moment was when I met John Lewis of the Modern Jazz Quartet, and we became very close friends, like brothers. And he introduced me to the whole jazz world one by one. And, you know, when one day, for example, the horn player who had been playing with Miles Davis, what's now called the Birth of the Cool Nonette, he wasn't available. And John said to Miles, well, look, you got to get Gunther. He's a wonderful player, blah, 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 and all that. And he loves jazz. And I already knew Miles at that time, but I hadn't played for him. So that's how I got onto that recording. And, you know, from there it just spread. There were four or five of us who loved jazz and could. We weren't maybe great improvisers, but we were. We could swing. We could play with the right feeling in jazz.
Mm-hmm. Let me go way back to the very beginning of your career. I was interested to read that one of your most important early influences was the music of Frederick Delius. In fact, one of the reasons why you became a composer in the first place. What was it about Delius that struck you?
Well, Delius's music is so rich harmonically. He took Wagner's late chromaticism and developed it in a most unique harmonic language. He and Scriabin were my two favorite composers, and they sort of still are. They're very important in my early development because they took, as I say, this very advanced chromaticism, which eventually led to atonality in the early 20th century. They took that style and developed it in their own personal way. It isn't that they just imitated Wagner, but they took that chromaticism and turned it into a very special language of their own. And Delius wrote so much beautiful music, and I was very fortunate to be involved with the great ballet, Romeo and Juliet, that Anthony Tudor did for Ballet Theatre in 1943 and 1944. And that is based on something like 50 minutes of Delius's music. And, of course, I grew up on the recordings that Beecham had made way back in the late 20s and 30s of a lot of Delius' music. I think he's still too neglected a composer. But, you know, there are things like in certain composers, Delius was very strong harmonically and melodically. But in terms of, let's say, any kind of polyphony or counterpoint, he never did that, you know. And he is not a very strong, exciting rhythmic composer, you know. Mm-hmm. And rhythm is one of those things that most excites people listening. And so, you know, he didn't have everything, but he sure had a beautiful harmonic language. And I'm my strong point as a composer is also harmonization, harmony. And I think it's probably the most important distinguishing element in all of music, because we recognize composers mostly by their harmonic language.
Mm-hmm. I remember some of these Delius recordings that were reissued on LP on Seraphim. They're beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, he was a genius.